Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel. You can find links to both channels and many other things on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I am Vlad. I will escort you through this week's special spine-chilling episode of the Radio Theater Channel's weekly download, in which we will explore the pitfalls of pride and how a small thing can be one's undoing, how your own fears can be your own worst enemy, and the lengths one may resort to when a situation is dire enough. Ha! We will begin with an episode of Suspense, titled The House in Cypress Canyon.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now, a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Undercurrent, in a remarkable tale of
suspense.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
If this real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, you know we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon. Mm-hmm. Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All I got in were the foundations, just concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
What do you want? Police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now, 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago, well, they just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, and I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. And, well, I don't like it. That's all. There's something funny about it.
What's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House that was only just started building.
All right.
Well, listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern, my reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but The fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas. We were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look!
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know what a sign like that. It mean right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim...
Either they want $600 a month...
We'll never know until we ask.
If it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying. Now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's going to give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh, yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How to do? Wow, looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it? Well, it was one of those things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. Been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it was owned by a bank in Sacramento. Of course, we didn't
care about it. Got this key in the mail along with the authorization to rent. Only one there is. Of course, you can have duplicates made. Yeah, seems to stick a little. Oh, no, there it is.
Doesn't sound as though that door had ever been opened.
Well, a little oil on the hinges will fix that, all right.
Oh, sure.
Now, here's your living room. Furniture's a little dusty, of course. You got to expect that. It's good furniture, though, you see? Benson Brothers.
Yes,
Now, over here's a little den. Paneled, you see? Radio, fireplace. Really a very attractive little room, particularly for a man.
Uh-huh, yep.
Now, the bedroom's off the living room here. Everything's all on one floor, you understand?
Uh-huh.
It's quite nice, I think.
Yes, uh-huh.
You can see you get the morning sun here. There's a view of the canyon through these front windows. We got cross ventilation.
That's about all there was to it. It wasn't the best place in the world. It was small and badly built, but what would you have done? We took it with as little inspection as that. It was the Saturday before Christmas. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things that everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own.
Don't be such a sour puss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay.
I guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Well, of course you can, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found on the desk?
Here they are.
Nope. Not this one. Sure this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is?
Oh, but honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a
little
bit.
Yeah, but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen, I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim, all right.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
It's right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference
we
in the world.
We can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday, then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim.
That's some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except that closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in a closet that's been locked up for over a year?
I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like
it. Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Well, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Well, all right, I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah, all right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was, perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Did you have a nightmare or something?
No. I heard it too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Sticky.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Between the acts of Suspense, this is Ken Niles for Roma Wines. These days before Christmas are busy ones indeed, yet smart hostesses everywhere find time for shopping and distinguished home entertaining later. The secret? Magnificent Grand Estate Wines. Presented by Roma, America's greatest vintner, Grand Estate Wines add distinction to your hospitality on a moment's notice. Make your holiday welcome, effortless, and in perfect taste. The brilliant clarity, full fragrance, and mellow taste of Grand Estate Wines please discriminating people everywhere. For Grand Estate Wines, limited bottlings by Roma, are born of choicest grapes, then patiently guided to superb taste richness by Roma vintner skill, necessary time, and America's finest winemaking resources. Delight your guests with Grand Estate California Wines for entertaining, medium sherry, ruby port, or golden muscatel. For dining, burgundy or sauterne. So insist on Grand Estate Wines and enjoy the crowning achievement of vintner skill. And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Robert Taylor as James A. Woods, with Kathy Lewis as his wife Ellen, in The House in Cypress Canyon. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. but to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood. That's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with the real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim?
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh? It seems to be all right now.
Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of a noise, and you got a little panicky, and...
What about the blood? It got on my hand.
It isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks, just take it easy. You know, you're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right. That's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us any time.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey. You ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. We didn't say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. It was sometime after midnight when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, den, even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look. For I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, the fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment, I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. A sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night, there was no sleep.
Jim?
Yes, Ellen?
Oh. What are you doing up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless. I'd make some coffee.
Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just hurt it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I
now
will.
You promise me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
A dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Well, you mean there's all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. Pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is, such a rapid onset of infection."
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. For somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps from the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or life. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness, and in that closet first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. It was sometime in the early hours of the morning when I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why, surely a minor question now. I only know that I did. And then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4,000 block. A report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman, poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this, there's
all
nothing
right,
on at all.
Stand back, stand back. Please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
He was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know is childish and useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but that's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow, only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. for there is someone at the door.
Someone at the door. Ah, what do you make of it, Sam?
It's quite a yarn. But what of it?
That's what I thought. Now listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip to it's a newspaper clipping. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping, well, you have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today, well, that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what? A guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something.
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Two bits you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay, coincidence. Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Sam.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the for rent sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right. Huh?
Listen, when a guy named whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you, then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Well, yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Well, sure it is. Well,
let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Well, looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, selected for your pleasure from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines.
You know, I can just imagine getting a Christmas card from that darling couple. It would naturally read, "Happy Holidays, from our home to yours." Ah, but I digress. It is a common practice at Halloween to go about in costume, and our next program features a man who thought he could use a costume to hide the murder he had committed. From the Diary of Fate, here is the entry about Walter Vincent.
The Diary of Fate. Fate plays no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 97, page 854.
In The Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name Walter Vincent. Occupation, chemist. Yes, Walter. For 4 years, you have been an employee of the Randall Foundation for scientific research. And in that time, you have come to realize how wrong you were to select science as a life work. Although you were diligent and accurate, you lack inventiveness. And many times during recent months, your wife Carol has pointed out in no uncertain terms the long and fruitless road which lies ahead of you. This realization brought you to temptation and a choice. Now, for a moment, I, fate, look ahead to a single instant in your life. An instant of decision.
I don't intend to give up everything now, Walter, no matter what it means.
Good. We still have a chance if we work together. You see, Kramer is going to give Philip that letter at the masquerade.
I don't understand, Walter.
And that means just one thing. I'll have to go to the masquerade in his place. And I'll have to get rid of Philip.
In that decision, Walter Vincent, you will find your goal and your destruction. Soon it will be time for a further entry under your name. When I have written, I will read from the record of Walter Vincent in the Diary of Fate. In the life of Walter Vincent, an infamous decision was made. Yet in the final analysis, it was a little thing, seemingly insignificant, that determined the inevitable outcome. It is ever thus. Remember, Walter Vincent, where it all started? You were driving home from the funeral of Professor Rudolf Teigman, an associate of the Foundation, who had died suddenly of a heart attack. Your wife and Philip Webb, also a chemist at the Foundation, were talking as you drove through the heavy rain.
He was a great scientist, old Teigman. The Foundation is certainly going to miss him.
Strange, isn't it? How suddenly and unexpectedly it can happen. Just like that, and it's all over.
Yeah, that's right, Carol.
I only hope I can achieve half as much in my life as he did in his. I'd consider it a lifetime well spent.
What? How can you say that, Philip? Professor Teigman was a lonely old man. He never really lived in his whole life. He never had any money or fun. Just work and more work. That's all he knew.
Yes, but look at all the splendid things he accomplished.
And where did that get him? I'll bet he wished plenty of times he'd enjoyed life more as he went along. Believe me, I'm not going to stake my happiness on a future I may never see.
Oh, excuse me, Carol. This next corner will be fine, Walter.
Oh, okay, Phil. Glad to drive you on home, though.
No, thanks. But there is one thing.
Yeah?
I'm going out to Teigman's lab tomorrow, and I'd appreciate it if you'd come along and sort of help me put his things in order out there.
Why, sure, Phil. Glad to.
Fine. See you tomorrow, then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Walter, I meant what I said about that future. I'm completely fed up with the way we live.
Oh, Carol, darling, don't talk like that. We'll get our chance one of these days.
One of these days can be a long, long time. I'm not going to wait much longer.
Well, you won't have to, honey. With Teigman gone, there are openings all down the line. And I'm almost a cinch to head my department.
Well? We'll see, Walter, we'll see.
Yes, Walter. The pressing impatience in Carol's heart is like a whip to your ambition. Because you do anything to make her happy. But the next morning, when the promotions were announced, the one you expected went to Philip. It was a humiliating shock to you. And you knew how Carol would take it. By the time you arrived at Teigman's remote laboratory, you had regained control of yourself. And nothing was said of the promotion as you helped Philip pack the clutter of apparatus, supplies, and papers. And then, Walter, a little thing happened.
I guess you can get most of that stuff in this box, Walter.
Yes, I think so. By the way, what was Teigman working on, Phil, do you know?
I have no idea. I used to be his assistant, but for the last 6 months, they had me back in the office. I hope there's something in these papers that'll tell us.
Yeah. Well, I'll make a list of everything I put in this box.
Fine. I'll go get something to carry the books in.
Yeah. Oh, blast it anyway.
What happened?
Oh, my pen had leaked. I've smeared ink all over.
Oh, there's probably a blotter in that bottom drawer of the desk. Be back in a minute.
You open the desk drawer, Walter, and as you search for a blotter, your eyes fell on something else. Something destined to change your entire life. A notebook. At one glance, you realized what was in it. The results of the last 6 months of intense research by the great Teigman. A completely revolutionary method of cracking crude oil. You heard Philip returning, and quickly, you slipped the notebook into your pocket and turned to face him.
By the way, Phil, I haven't congratulated you on your promotion yet. I think it's great.
Thanks, Walter. I appreciate that. It was between us, you know, and, well, I thought maybe you'd...
Oh, I'd resent it? No, not me. You make a better executive than I anyway. I'd be lost out of the lab.
Oh, thank you, Walter. I'm taking my vacation soon, and when I get back, let's get together, huh?
Sure.
Oh, by the way, what are you working on, Walter?
Petroleum. Okay. Yes, and I think I may have something, too. Or don't say anything about it, Phil. You see, I'm not sure yet, but if I'm on the right track, it'll be big. Very big.
Yes, Walter. Because of a leaking fountain pen, you alone had found Teigman's notebook. You could have turned it over to the Foundation, but you had other ideas. In the days that passed, you made certain that nowhere else among Teigman's papers was there a hint of what he had been working on. You checked and tested his formula. It was complete and accurate. Then, at last, you were ready. The startling announcement came out that you, Walter Vincent, had devised a new and revolutionary method for refining crude oil.
This is amazing, Walter. As the director of the Randall Foundation, I congratulate you. And leave it to me, my boy. I'll see to it that you get a position at once where you can really exercise your ability.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kramer.
And congratulations, Walter.
Thank you.
That was great publicity for the outfit. And say, I want you to pose with Dr. Kramer here, and then we'll get some individual portraits, some action shots of you in the lab, too. You know, the papers are going to eat this up.
Yes. Just 3 short weeks after you had stolen Professor Teigman's notebook, Walter, your world was completely changed. You had a new job at more than double your old salary. You were known in scientific circles as a very promising young man. And Carol, of course, was delighted. But the change, Walter, had been brought about by your choice for evil. And already forces were gathering against you. Even as you relished your newfound glory, and Carol chattered happily about a forthcoming party, another little thing happened.
Oh, Walter, this will be the first party we've gone to in years where I can really feel like somebody.
Yes, I know.
Well, I told you our break would come one day.
Oh, I'm glad it's a masquerade. I've got the most wonderful idea for a costume. Marie Antoinette.
Oh?
But, well, it's going to be expensive.
Oh, darling, I don't care if it is. We can afford it now, and if it'll make you happy, you... Oh, I'll get it, Carol. Hello? Walter Vincent speaking.
This is Dr. Kramer, Walter. Do you know when Philip Webb is coming back from his vacation?
The day after tomorrow, I think, Doctor.
Oh, that's too bad.
Why? What's the matter, Doctor?
Well, I'm leaving town tonight, and I wanted to see him before I left. A very strange thing just happened, Walter. It was like getting a message from the grave.
A message from the grave? What do you mean, Doctor?
An envelope addressed to Philip just arrived. It was evidently lost in the mail. You see, it's from Professor Tyson. It must be about the work he was doing when he died.
Yes, Walter. A little thing. A misaddressed envelope. A letter lost in the mail now suddenly loomed up in your life as a huge stumbling block. It would topple your whole world into ruin. You knew that somehow you had to get that letter or you were trapped. But you realized that the first thing you had to do was tell Carol. Tell her the whole thing. You had to know if you could depend on her.
And that's the way it happened, Carol. That's the whole story. Well, don't just stand there. Say something.
It's such a shock. I don't know what to say. You've got to get that letter, Walter. Some way, you've got to get it.
That's what I wanted you to say, Carol. I had to know if I could count on your help.
I don't intend to give up everything now, Walter. No matter what it means.
Good. We still have a chance, if we work together. You see, Kramer's going to give Philip that letter at the dance.
I don't understand,
and
Walter.
And that means one thing. I'll have to go to the masquerade in his place. And I'll have to get rid of Philip.
Yes, Walter. Because of a fountain pen that leaked. A little thing. You were faced with a decision. And your choice was for evil. Now, because of another little thing, a misaddressed envelope, you were threatened with exposure and disgrace. A net of circumstances was closing around you. Soon there would be no escape. Soon, I will write again under your name in the Diary of Fate. Tense, worried days later, that you, Walter, finally added the last detail to your method of murder. Philip had returned from his vacation, and you had talked to him. Then you explained your scheme to Carol.
Oh, Walter, I'm afraid. Are you sure there's no other way?
Positive. I've looked for that letter every place I possibly could since Kramer's been gone. I can't find it. There's nothing else we can do.
All right, Walter.
Now listen, I've talked to Philip. He's going to the masquerade as Pinocchio. He's got a mask that covers the whole head, and it'll fit me. I told him today that I had to go to New York, so he thinks you're going to the dance with him. I want to be sure a lot of people know that.
Well, that'll be easy. Then what?
Saturday evening, I'll get on the train here and get off when it stops at Maplewood. You meet me there with a car.
And bring you back here?
Yes. Then I'll take care of Philip. We'll go to the dance, get the letter from Kramer, and leave. I'll catch a plane. I've already got the reservation under the name of Jones. I'll overtake the train and get back on it. All you know is that Phil was a little high when he took you home.
Oh, Walter, what if something goes wrong?
Nothing can go wrong, I tell you. Not if we're careful and use our heads. The hardest time will be the dance. We'll really have to play our parts there. And play them well.
Yes, Walter. have to play a part. And play it well. For murder is a hazardous game. Where they would do the most good, you drop casual bits of information about your trip to New York. And that Philip was escorting Carol to the dance. And finally, on Saturday night, you even fixed it so David Sloan, the Foundation's public relations man, was at the station with Carol to see you off.
So if you can drop in and see him, it'll be worth a feature story in his new magazine.
Well, I'll certainly try, David. It all depends on how much time I have.
Well, Mr. Vincent, busy or not, you better find time somewhere to write me every day. Understand?
Sorry you're going to miss that masquerade tonight, old boy. That's the one thing nobody really should miss.
Don't I know it. And I'm sending Carol with Philip Webb. Pinocchio and Marie Antoinette should make quite a pair. Hey, you think I can trust them together?
I think so. Pinocchio's made of wood, you know.
Yes, but there are no strings on him either.
Well, I'll keep an eye on them, Walter. Have a good time in the city and hurry back.
I will, David. Better get aboard, Carol. Now, don't forget, one block south of the station at Maplewood. And don't be late.
I won't, don't worry. I'll get rid of David and leave right away.
As the train traveled a few miles to Maplewood, you talked with the porter about your compartment, tipped him lavishly, spoke to the conductor, and made certain that several of the passengers were aware of your presence and would remember you. Then, as the train pulled to a stop in Maplewood, you stepped off quickly, quietly, melted into the crowd. A few minutes later, you were with Carol in your car, speeding back the way you had come.
Better slow down a little, Carol.
We have to hurry, Walter.
Slow down, I said. All we need right now is to be picked up for speeding. That'd fix things fine.
When we get to Phillips, shall I wait for you?
No. Go on home, put on your costume. I'll pick you up in his car.
All right. We're almost there. It's down on the next block.
Okay, turn here and stop. I'll walk the rest of the way.
Walter.
What?
Walter, be careful.
Don't worry, this will be easy. The tough part's going to be that dance afterwards, and don't forget that for a minute. I'll go on home and get dressed. I got to get going.
What is... Why, Walter, I thought you were on your way to New York.
Well, I'm supposed to be. You're still going to the dance, aren't you?
Of course. I'm just dressing now.
Well, let me in, Philip. Yeah, I got to talk to you.
Sure, come in. What is it, Walter? What's wrong?
Is anyone else here now?
No. Walter, what's the matter?
Philip, are you going to be alone tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
All day? You're not expecting anyone? Not going out?
No, not until 9 tomorrow night. Why?
Oh, that's fine, fine. Philip, I'm in a jam. Bad one. I want to stay here tonight. Could you help me out?
Now, wait a minute. I think you'd better start at the beginning and tell me all about it.
All right, but... Oh, is that whiskey there in the decanter? I really need a drink, Phil.
Well, I'll get it for you. I've never seen you like this, Walter. You're in bad shape. Oh, here you are.
Thanks. Well, Philip, it's like this. Oh, the glass. I'm sorry, Phil. It slipped.
Oh, forget it. You'd better sit down, Walter. I'll pick up the pieces. It's nothing. Go on, sit down, Walter. Walter, the poker, what are you...
Yes, Walter. Killing Philip was simple. For a moment, you stared down at him, lying dead in front of his fireplace. Then you moved quickly. You took his keys from his pocket, set his watch ahead to midnight and smashed the crystal. Arranged the room to look as if he had fallen and struck his head while replacing a light bulb in the chandelier. Then you entered his bedroom. And when you came out again, You were Philip Webb, fully dressed in the bizarre costume of Pinocchio. A few minutes later, in Philip's car, you picked up Carol and drove to the masquerade.
Walter, you're sure everything's all right? You didn't make any mistake.
No, I didn't. Now stop worrying me, will you? You keep watching me in there, and just as soon as I get that letter from Dr. Kramer, you fake a headache so we can leave.
All right.
And don't let me get stuck with anybody where I have to talk too much.
I won't.
All right. We better go on in. And for heaven's sake, act like nothing's happened. Everything depends on this now.
Well, I'll be. Pinocchio, you old rascal. Get up, terrific.
Oh, you like it?
Phil, that's a wonderful costume. I got to get a picture of that one. What a head and what a face.
I told him it was going to be the best in the place.
That's great, Carol. It really is. Say, you're rather pretty good yourself, Marie Antoinette.
Thank you.
Sure, too bad old Walter had to miss this party. We're really going to have a time tonight.
Kramer hasn't shown up yet, Carol, but he should be here any minute. How am I doing? Heard your comment?
You're doing fine. I don't think anybody suspects a thing. Just keep it up.
Don't worry, I will. We can't slip now.
Oh, Philip, pardon me, folks. Phil, Dr. Kramer just came in. He wants to see you a minute. He's back there in the corner.
Oh, thanks a lot, David. I'll go right away.
I'll wait for you here, Philip.
Well, hello there, Philip, or should I say Pinocchio. That certainly is a fine costume.
Oh, hello, Dr. Kramer.
What I wanted to see you about, Philip, is a letter. It was lost in the mail, I presume. You see, it's for you, from Professor Tigman.
From Tigman?
Yes, I have it here. Do you want it now? I can just as easily keep it until Monday.
No, I'll take it now, Doctor, and thank you very much.
Oh, Philip.
Excuse me, Doctor. Yes, Carol?
I'm sorry, but my head is splitting. Would you mind taking me home?
Oh, that's too bad, Carol. Of course not. Come along.
I've got it, Carol. I've got the letter. Now nobody will ever know. Now we're set for life.
Yes, Walter, it was all over now. You had the letter. The perfect alibi for murder. All you had to do was leave the dance, get back on the train, and you were safe. But take heed, you who listen, lest you think fate unjust, a conspirator in evil. In a few moments, I will write for the last time under the name Walter Vincent. When I have written, I will read from the Diary of Fate. Confident that your masquerade had been successful. Yes, your impersonation of Philip Webb had been perfect. And now safety lay only a few feet away. But then, Walter, another little thing happened.
Let's get going, Carl.
Oh, my heel.
Carol, what's the matter?
The heel of my slipper broke and caught in my skirt.
Let me get it.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the high spot of the evening. Yes, friends, this has been a wonderful party. And now, hey, wait a minute. Don't let that Pinocchio get away.
Hold it.
I've got a big surprise for you. You can't leave now.
I've got to leave.
The judges' committee has selected the outstanding masquerader of the evening, none other than Pinocchio. Now, folks, it's midnight. And you're first, my boy, so remove your mask, Pinocchio, and take a bow
Mr. Philip Webb.
From our mask? No, no.
Come on, folks. He's back. We'll give you a hand, Phil.
Come on, take your
hand. No, stop it. Stop it.
I got it all.
Why?
It's not Phil Webb. It's Walter Vincent.
Yes, Walter. Your masquerade was perfect. So perfect that you won first prize and destroyed your own alibi. And now, as the seconds tick away inexorably toward the moment of your execution for murder, your wife, Carol, for her part in the crime, sits alone in her prison cell, waiting hopelessly for an empty future. And now it is time to close the book. Another entry has been duly noted on the pages of eternity, and justice has been served. In the case of Walter Vincent, as in the cases of all mortals, I, fate, am but the instrument of a plan. And the countless little things that happen are the tools with which I work. Because of a fountain pen that leaked, this man, Walter Vincent, was given an opportunity, and he chose for evil. Then, because the heel of a slipper broke and delayed his escape for a few critical seconds, I, fate, brought him to justice. Ponder well the moral, you who listen. And remember, there is a page for you in the Diary of Fate.
Cast included Herbert Litton, Tom Brown, Gloria Blondell, Peter Leeds, John Arthur, Ray Erlenborn, Ivan Ditmars, and Hal Sawyer. Diary of Fate is a Larry Finley transcription. Brought to you from Hollywood.
It often amuses me to see how the hubris of a mortal can be undone by such seemingly insignificant things. This brings us to our third and final program for this week. From the man in the inner sanctum and his wonderful creaking door, the story of The Skull That Walks.
Good evening, friends of the inner sanctum. This is Raymond, your host. Well, come in, won't you? Yes, how are your spirits this evening?
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Our spirits are fine, too. Would you like to see them?
Oh, it's no trouble at all.
Now, which would you care to see first? The spirit or the body? Ah, well, the body is right over there on the floor. And the spirit is right next to it. Oh, you can't see it. I forgot to tell you, you have to be one in order to see one. Shall we get started? Well, naturally. Now, turn out the lights.
No, you won't see any ghosts in the dark, but
they'll be able to see you. Far from town, there are a group of three hills. On the summit of the highest of them is the Cruz estate, owned by two brothers, Arthur and Carl. At this moment, Carl and his wife, Lucille, are digging a hole at the entrance of the estate, planting young poplar trees.
Carl, I think it's deep enough.
Oh, I think we ought to go a little deeper down.
Oh, here comes Spears.
Spears? You're digging?
Yes, we're going to plant a whole row of Lombardy poplars.
Mm-hmm. You mean right here?
Yep. We're going to line both sides of the road.
Well, perhaps you'd better let me do it. I'm your caretaker. I should do the gardening. No.
Spears, you look upset. What's the matter?
Well, where you're digging is an old Indian burial spot. There's a curse on it.
Oh, don't worry about it, Spears.
You don't believe it?
Of course not. Lucille and I don't go in for superstition.
Yes, but it's no superstition, sir. It's a...
You hit a rock.
Uh-huh. All right. Doesn't sound like a rock. A little hollow. I'll dig it up, whatever it is.
Yeah. What? Carl! It's a skull.
Yes. A skull. Spears is right. This place must have been an old Indian burial ground.
Please put it back.
No, keep it.
Carl. Perhaps you'd better put it back.
No. Please bury it again, Mr. Cruz. It will bring bad luck to all of us.
No, Spears, that's just a silly superstition.
Well, what about the rest of the skeleton?
Well, there doesn't seem to be one. No, just a skull. You bring it into the house, will you, Spears?
Look, partner, I'd rather not.
All right, I'll take it in myself. But don't either of you mention this to my brother Arthur. He's terribly scared of things like this, and he's just gotten over his nervous breakdown.
Carl, perhaps you should put the skull back.
Why, Lucille, you're not being taken in by this hokum about curses, are you?
Oh, that sounded like my wife, Mary. She was cleaning the windows.
Good heavens. She fell out of the window.
Mary. Well, she's unconscious. Please do something. You must do something.
I'm afraid there's nothing we can do, Spears. She hit her head against a rock. She's dead.
How, Spears?
He's quieted down.
I can't understand it. There's only one rock underneath the window, and Mary hit that. That one rock. There isn't even a pebble around for yards.
Well, don't go imagining things again, Arthur.
Spears kept talking about a curse.
Spears believes in pixies and gremlins, too, don't forget.
Well, I feel rather funny about it all.
Oh, Carl, maybe you'd better switch some more lamps on. This living room feels gloomy.
Oh, let's cut this nonsense out.
Wait. Do you hear anything?
Oh? Oh, don't.
Yes. Something is coming from the ceiling.
What's coming from the ceiling? I don't hear...
What is it?
It must be the beam. I sometimes do that from the heat.
It's not the beams. It's too regular a sound.
What room is directly above us?
It's an old bedroom. We use it as a storeroom now. It hasn't been opened in years.
There's something up there.
Of course there is. A lot of old things from years back, Lucy.
Did you put the skull in the score door?
Yes, I did.
What are you two whispering of... Coming down the stairs.
We'll take a look and settle this. so far.
Look!
At your feet, Carl. The skull. How did it get down here? It came down the steps.
Seems to be looking up at us.
A skull. How did it get into the house?
Carl found it while digging. Spears said it belonged to some Indian.
Spears was right. There is a curse on the house. We'll all be killed. I'm leaving. I can't stand it.
Well, Carl, what are you going to do with the skull?
Well, lock it up in the closet. Lock it.
Carl, you'd better bury it again.
No, I can't do that, Lucille. If I do, it means I believe in all this tommy rot about ghosts.
Well, then suppose you tell me how a skull could open a door and then come bouncing down the steps.
I don't know. Maybe someone's playing a trick on us, dear.
What happened to Mary was no trick, Carl. Nor is this, and you know it.
Well, whatever it is, I'm not going to bury it. We'll keep it locked up in the closet.
Oh, Mr. Cruz.
Yes. What is it, Spears?
Well, it isn't my place to tell you, sir, but I...
You're referring to the skull, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, it won't bother us anymore. The whole thing's some queer trick. I've got it safely hidden in this closet. I'm putting a lock on the outside.
But the lock isn't going to do any good, sir. It will break through the door, just like the last time.
I don't think anything like that can happen again. I'm the only one that has a key to this lock. If the skull wants to break out, you have to come to me for the key. How are you feeling, Arthur?
I'll never feel right in this house again.
Oh, nonsense. Why don't you put a light on? Arthur, it's morbid sitting here in the dark by yourself.
We're all going to die.
Don't be ridiculous, Arthur.
Where is the skull?
Where it can't get out. Tomorrow I'll take it into town and let the police look at it.
Tomorrow will be too late.
Look, I'm getting tired of this. You've got to get hold of yourself, Arthur. You'll go completely to pieces.
You think I'm a coward, don't you?
Oh, Arthur, no. You're not a coward. You're just a victim of your own exaggerated imagination.
Wait. There's someone at the door.
I'll open it.
Who is it?
I don't know. No one came in.
Something came in. For heaven's sake, put the light on.
The skull. I can't believe it.
You can't believe it. There it is, grinning at you from the floor, but you can't believe it. You don't believe in these things.
I put a lock on the door.
Locks aren't going to help. Nothing is going to help. We're all going to die.
It's an hour later now. Arthur has gotten over his hysteria, but he is still terrified.
I'm not going to spend another night in this house, Carl.
But, Arthur, there's got to be some logical explanation.
I'm not in the least bit curious. I just want to get out of here tonight.
I'm going to go with him, Carl.
Lucille. Well, perhaps we'll bury it again. We'll put it back in the same place we found
it. That won't do any good. It's too late now.
Don't be ridiculous. If it wants anything at all, it wants to get buried again. I'm sure all this mysterious business will come to an end as soon as we bury it.
The house won't ever be the same.
Oh, stop it. Both of you. You're acting like a couple of scared children. We'll put the skull back where we found it, and we won't be bothered by it anymore. Spears! Spears!
Yes, Mr. Cruz.
This skull. Let's take it out and bury it in the same place where we found it.
I'm glad you reconsidered, sir. It's the only way.
I don't seem to remember the spot.
Well, it's on the other side, sir, right near the entrance road.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir. Here it is.
Yes. But the hole we dug, it's not here.
I filled it in, sir.
Oh, well, we'd better dig it up.
Yes, sir.
If you'll hold the skull, I'll dig it open. We might as well do it right. I know exactly how deep it was.
If you don't mind, Miss Cruz, I'd rather not touch the skull.
All right. Yeah, that's about right. Now we'll put the thing back.
But it doesn't seem to want to go back.
No, I just missed dropping it into the hole. Hold the flashlight down here.
Yes, sir.
Well, that does it.
Oh, I hope we'll have no more trouble.
Well, Carl, did you bury it?
Yes, same place. That's all. Forget about it, shall we?
Maybe it's easy for you, Carl. But I won't forget about it for a long time.
Neither will I. I'll be having nightmares about it for months.
I don't know what's gotten into you, Lucille. You're never easily frightened.
I'm not. But skulls that roll by themselves give me a funny feeling.
Mm. So, look, come on, let's play cards, huh? Hearts? We don't need more than three hands to play. We'll forget the whole crazy business, huh? Okay?
Well, we might as well.
All right, deal the cards.
Okay. You. Yeah. Yeah, well, we're getting back to normalcy, huh?
Arthur, pass your card.
That wind came up suddenly.
Who's first?
You are, sir.
Oh, all right. Nine of diamonds.
Your go, Arthur. Come on, Arthur, throw a card.
I think I hear something.
Of course you do. The wind.
No, I thought I heard a rapping sound.
Look, just pay attention to the game and stop listening for sounds.
Here's my card.
You threw a club, diamonds, the suit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear that?
What was that?
It's only the wind blowing the shutter. Oh, come on, let's play. Throw a card, Arthur.
There's someone at the door.
It isn't the wind. Someone's outside.
All right, I'll open the door.
No, don't open it.
Please, Lucille. Sitting here frightened isn't going to do us any good. We've got to open the door.
Don't open it, Carl.
Who is it, Carl?
What? It's nothing. It's just the wind.
You're lying. Your face is white as a sheet.
I know. It's the skull. It's come back. I tell you, it's nothing. It's just the wind. Nobody was there.
I'll see for myself. The skull.
Mrs. Cruz, I didn't hear you knock.
I didn't. I want to talk to you, Spears.
Yes, Mrs. Cruz, but it's rather late.
You've been up late before.
Oh, yes, but it's just that I'm tired tonight. I don't mean to be rude.
You've been doing a lot of night work?
What are you referring to, Mrs. Cruz?
Spears, you don't really believe in skulls that move around by themselves, do you?
Well, I warned your husband about it. It's a curse.
Is it part of a curse for a skull to use a trowel to unbury itself? Your trowel?
My trowel? Oh, you're mistaken.
No, I'm not. It just came from there.
Why would I want to do anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Why? Why I'm here. I'd like to know why.
Please, Mrs. Cruz, I'm tired. We'll talk about it in the morning.
We'll talk about it now, Spears, right now.
Get out of my room.
All right. I'm going straight to the police. I've got the trowel. We'll see if the skull left any fingerprints.
You won't do that, Mrs. Cruz.
Oh, yes, I will. All right, Spears, just sit right where you are. I'll shoot.
Oh, please. Put the gun down.
Start talking.
It's all a mistake.
If you don't start talking, I'll shoot. In self-defense. Did you dig up that skull? Did you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
And you rolled the skull down the steps. The first night it was in this house, didn't you?
Well, it was only a joke.
And you also managed to open the closet.
Yes, but I...
Whose skull is it?
I don't know.
You're lying. That skull has something to do with you. I checked up on it. Your first wife disappeared. Perhaps the police can identify the skull.
Oh, please, don't go to the police. It was my first wife, Jane. I killed her. I didn't want your husband to bring the skull to the police, so I tried to scare all of you away from here as the safest measure.
Go on.
Yes. Wait a minute. Who rolled the skull into Arthur's room? It wasn't me. It must
That's
have been...
That's right. Was me. Perhaps you and I can work things out. I tried to frighten my dear brother-in-law Arthur away so that I can have complete ownership of the entire estate. You see, Arthur is leaving tonight.
Yeah. Perhaps we can help each other. No one has to know of our little conversation.
No one is going to know.
Well, now that we've both accomplished our purpose, maybe it would be the best thing to bury the skull again.
Yes. We'll do it now.
Well, here we are.
Let's hurry. They'll miss me if I'm out here too long.
Perhaps we'd better dig another hole.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Will you hold the skull?
No, I'd rather not.
You haven't suddenly gotten squeamish, have you, Mrs. Cruz?
Put the skull in the ground and dig that hole.
What's the matter?
The skull. Look at it.
What about it?
It's moving. Can't you see?
Why, it's just the wind pushing
it. Hurry up.
There. Yes. There. It's deep enough now. Hand me the skull. Oh, I forgot. You won't touch it. All right, I'll get it myself.
What's the matter?
My hand. I can't get my hand out. The jaws clamped down.
Your hand.
Please. Help me! You've got to help me! Do something! You've got to do something! It won't let go!
I can't!
Oh, please, Jane. Jane, darling, I didn't mean to kill you. You're my wife. I didn't mean it. It was an accident. Please believe me. I'll do anything. Anything. Oh, no! No, Jane!
How is she, Carl?
It's pretty bad. The doctor says it's hopeless. There's nothing more he can do. Her hair, it's turned completely white. She's just out of her mind.
Horrible.
Spears died this morning. He never recovered consciousness. Died of fright.
Everything else seems to make sense, but I don't understand how the skull could have clamped its jaws on his hand.
When he picked it up, he must have picked it up upside down. The lower jaw, which swings on a hinge, came down. He was so frightened that his hand froze to the skull. Spears was just frightened to death.
I want that skull. Yes, sir, I want it as a knocker for the inner sanctum door. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
As we close out this week's episode, I wish you all the best and hope you all stay in good spirits.